How long will this feeling last? What stage happens next? Do they go in order? How do I just get to acceptance? Why is it so different every day? Welcome to Grief is the New Normal. I'm Dr. Heather Taylor, a licensed psychologist and grief specialist, here to help change the conversation about grief and build community and connection while we all adjust to this new normal we are living in. This podcast is for you if you're grieving or if you are supporting someone in a season of grief. I'm glad you're here. Welcome back, everyone. This week, we are focusing on the stages of grief and starting the discussion about different types of loss. This episode is part three of the four-part series. So if you're just joining, I'd encourage you to listen to the previous two episodes just to help build context. I'm a pretty context-driven human, so I find that stuff helpful. We already discussed what it means to invite people into our grief spaces through leaning into loss, and we've discussed some common grief responses and reactions. Last part that we're going to talk about next week will be the spectrum of grief. So let's get started. As we talked about in our very first episode, grief is a universal lived experience, yet it's very often misunderstood. It's confusing, it's overwhelming, it's uncomfortable. It would be way more comfortable if it followed a natural progression, right? If there was some logical pattern to it. Many of us are familiar with the five stages of grief outlined by Elizabeth Kubler-Ross: denial, anger, bargaining, depression, and acceptance. However, these stages were written for individuals that had received a terminal diagnosis to help them face and process their impending death. It's interesting how a framework meant for one thing got applied to a different lived experience, got applied to the experience of being left behind. I think as humans, we so want to make meaning from things. And if something seems close enough, we try to make that work for us. I think that's a possibility for what happened with adapting the five grief stages to not just a terminal diagnosis, but all types of grief. Of course, those of us who have lived through loss, well, we know that grief is not a linear process. It's more like a roller coaster with ups and downs, loops and twists, and no clear beginning or end. Or, I use this visual with clients often, a cesspool. And you don't know which emotion's going to bubble up to the surface or when. And yes, I realize that's an unappetizing description, and it's accurate. Grief is messy, unpredictable, and the different emotions, stages, whatever you want to call them, can catch you off guard. They can shift in a moment from anger to depression to denial, or add in any emotional option from our favorite feelings wheel. There are more than just five emotional experiences related to grief, or stages related to grief. The idea that grief follows a neat progression from one stage to the next is a myth. In reality, people may experience these stages in any order, or even cycle through them multiple times. And sometimes they may not experience certain stages at all. We talked about this a little bit in the first episode about how the emotions connected to grief can come in waves, big, acute, frequent, and then over time, they can spread out and lessen in intensity. The stages can have a similar effect. Another limitation of defining grief by stages is that the stages are directly applied to the primary loss, namely, the loved one and the actual death event. This isn't factoring in the secondary losses that occur over time. Now, secondary losses are what I like to call the ripples, the way the loss will impact us for the rest of our lives that we aren't necessarily factoring in upon the initial death event. For example, a family loses a father figure. So, you know, one of the kiddos turns 16 and dad isn't there to teach them how to drive, even though he was there to teach their older siblings how to drive. And yes, I realize not every family has a dad who teaches them how to drive. Sometimes it's a mom or an uncle or a grandparent. This is just an example. Another being later in life, you know, that same family system who lost a dad figure, there's someone not there to walk them down the aisle or be a grandparent who passes on a favorite pastime. Those secondary losses, those ripples occur because our person isn't here and time keeps passing, right? These secondary losses can catch us off guard because they happen when there's potentially been a chunk of time that's passed. So these grief bursts, quote unquote grief bursts, can catch us off guard. That's something that can make grief complicated and frustrating, is we don't know when those ripples or grief bursts are going to hit. And yet we can't just exist in a state of being chronically on guard, waiting for the next grief wave. That would just be burying our feet in the sand until we can't find our way out, letting the waves just keep washing over us, our feet continuing to sink until we feel really, really stuck. And I think that links back to why we want grief to feel linear, to feel like there are stages, because it gives us a sense of control over the emotions resulting from an event that we didn't choose. It gives us a sense of predictability that, okay, this is just a moment, a season. It's going to end. It's going to change to something different. And I think that's where that desire for a linear process comes from. We want to know it's going to get different. When we're able to recognize the various stages of grief, again, denial, anger, bargaining, depression, and acceptance, we can better understand our own emotions and reactions. We can see that what we're experiencing is a natural response to loss, not a sign of weakness or failure. Reminder, check out the Common Grief Reactions handout that's linked in last week's episode in the show notes to better help inform you where you're at and how grief is impacting you on the daily. Now back to this episode. I think what's more important than understanding the stages of grief is recognizing that grief is deeply personal and such an individual experience. There's no right or wrong way to grieve, and there's no timetable for healing. It's okay to feel angry one moment, the next. It's okay to cry in the morning and laugh in the afternoon. It's okay to seek support from others or retreat into solitude. There's no one-size-fits-all approach to grief. So while we'd love to have specific timelines attached to the different stages of grief, it just doesn't work like that. It's not like we're just going to be angry for, 3 months, and then we're going to bargain for a week, and then we'll be depressed for 6 months, and then, after about 9 months, we'll hit acceptance. And because it doesn't work like that, because there's no timelines, that gets to be okay that we're in and out of these different stages. Something interesting is that a sixth stage of grief has emerged. In his work on grief and loss, David Kessler introduces the concept of meaning making, the process of finding meaning and purpose with grief. Now, this doesn't mean we find some kind of silver lining or make sense of our loss suddenly or minimize the impact that it's had. Not at all. That is not our jam. Rather, it's about finding ways to honor our loved one and integrate their memory into our lives in a new way. Meaning making can take many forms, from creating rituals and memorials to finding ways to give back to others in honor of our loved one. It's about finding meaning in the midst of pain and hope in the midst of despair. It's learning how to say hello again in a new way, whether that's talking out loud to our loved one, writing them a letter, lighting a candle for them, setting out an empty chair at a family meal, memorial tattoos, playing music that makes us think of them, doing traditions we used to do as a family. It could be planting a tree or a bush or a plant in remembrance of them and being able to externalize that love that we feel for that person and find something to nurture. And that can feel really good, being able to pour out some of those internal feelings in an external way. I remember doing a grief group with some adolescents I was working with, and we were doing our closing ritual. We'd been working together for about 8 weeks. And we got those cute little terracotta plants from the craft store, pots from the craft store, and the kiddos got to paint on them. So they could paint a picture of their loved one or a memory or a word that was representative of where they're at in their grief or just held deep meaning for them. And then we planted little succulents in them. And so they had something to take home with them that was a tangible representation, not only of the work that they did in their therapy grief group, also of their loved one. And perk of succulents, they don't require an overabundance of care. You don't have to tend to it every day. It just needs a little water, a little sun, and it does great. And I think it's just a nice, gentle reminder that we can go slow with ourselves and that it can feel good to find other things to pour ourselves into, to nurture. So let's apply this concept of meaning making to those different designated stages of grief to give us some more examples of ways to cope, depending on where you're at in your process. Now, remember, these are not all inclusive. These are just some examples to give. And if you think of something different, that's great. And if these stages don't apply to you, that's okay too. You might get an idea about something you could use as a coping strategy or a reframe. So, starting with denial. In the denial stage, you know, individuals really struggle to accept the reality of the loss. This is usually fairly early on in the grief stage. Meaning making during this stage might involve seeking explanations or reasons for why the loss occurred. It could involve mindsets that allow us to delay the permanence of the loss, to, you know, hold on to hope or finding meaning in that face of uncertainty, knowing a lot of change is going to come because of the loss. Sometimes the reality of the loss is just too much to take. So it can be helpful or comforting to try to seek out a reason for why this happened. Usually because it doesn't make sense. It doesn't feel fair that someone has died, and it can be comforting to try to find some sort of rationale for it to make sense. Even though deep down we know it's not necessarily going to make sense. There aren't going to be easy answers here, and we just might not be ready to face that yet. So we try to find an explanation for why it happened, even if there isn't one. An example with denial is, say you have a spouse who's active military and they go on deployments throughout the year, and say there's an accident when they're home. They weren't on deployment, but they were home and they died. And sometimes what can happen is we just imagine they're on deployment because mentally that feels easier. It feels like there's still a chance they're going to come home, or we forget that they're gone because, you know, we're used to them being gone for months at a time. And so that just, it helps ease into that new normal they're going to be existing in. In the anger stage, you know, that's another really common response to grief. Because, you know, death can feel unfair. We can feel frustrated or powerless. And I've talked about this before. Like, anger is a productive emotion. It can feel better than the stagnancy of sadness. And so people can hang out in this space for a while. Meaning making in the anger stage might involve seeking justice or understanding the purpose behind the loss. Some individuals may channel their anger into efforts to create bigger changes, making a difference in honor of the person they've lost, trying to go after systemic challenges, just to try to make a difference for someone else so that others don't have to feel or experience the loss the same way we did. This can be where, you know, foundations start in honor of people who've died, because we're wanting to prevent this feeling from happening to other people. In the bargaining stage, individuals may attempt to negotiate with a higher power to seek ways to undo the loss. Meaning making in this stage could involve, you know, seeking meaning or purpose in the events leading up to the loss, you know, trying to track like how we could have seen that coming so that we could have tried to do things differently in our head. Even though we can't go back in time, that's a way to ground or to orient or think through, you know, alternative ways that day could have gone. It could also involve making promises or commitments as a way of finding solace or meaning in the face of helplessness. So, you know, if I can hear my person's voice one more time. I'll never say a swear word again. Or, you know, if I pray every day, then I'll get a sign that my loved one's okay. You know, we make these pleas, these promises, anything to lessen the pain we're experiencing in the moment and to try to see or hear our person just one more time. Now, depression's a very natural response to grief, especially as time passes and we adjust to this new normal, this reality, the realities of the loss start to settle in. Meaning making in this stage might involve exploring deeper emotions, doing more journaling, starting to ask more existential type questions because we have the capacity to. It could also involve finding meaning in connections shared with the person who passed, or, you know, lessons you're learning about yourself as you're navigating this grief journey, or from others who've been through grief before you. The last stage is acceptance. And so I want to make a very clear point here. So acceptance does not mean the absence of grief. Rather, it's an acknowledgement and an integration of the loss into your life. Meaning making in the acceptance stage involves finding maybe a sense of peace or purpose in the midst of pain. It can involve honoring the memory of the person who's passed and finding ways to carry their legacy forward. Acceptance allows individuals to find meaning in the experience, their personal experience of grief, and to start moving forward in their lives with a renewed sense of purpose. So it's not that you've quote unquote over it, quote unquote, moved on. Not at all. We never forget our people that we've lost or get over the fact that they're no longer here. It does continue to suck. It's like the part of our heart that they have occupied has solidified. It's jagged and hurts. It's uncomfortable and we can't take it out. It's in us, you know? And nothing's going to replace our person. And over time, with life, with new experiences, with these rituals and things we do to help us cope and make meaning, it almost like it builds a protective layer around that jagged part of us, almost like a cushion, just cushion upon cushion. So while that solidified part doesn't ever change, we change around it. It's kind of like a princess and the pea situation, right? She's got all those mattresses covering up that one little pea. Well, that pea, she can still feel it through all those mattresses. Just like we can still feel our grief, feel the love for the person that is no longer physically here through, even though life continues to grow around us. It doesn't take that away. It just provides a little more cushion. So meaning making provides a framework for finding purpose, coping with the pain, and ultimately integrating the experience of grief into our story. It's important to acknowledge and honor all forms of grief, regardless of their origin. Each loss is valid and deserving of our attention and compassion. I think that it's important to acknowledge here that there are non-death related losses as well, and they have weight and impact too. And we'll for sure spend time talking about those in another episode. As we continue to navigate the ups and downs of grief, I encourage us to remember that we're not alone. There's strength in community and healing and connection. And whether we're grieving the loss of a loved one, a job, a relationship, or even a dream, we can find comfort and support in one another. Thank you for joining me while we have this conversation about the different stages of grief. Next time we meet, we're going to wrap up this four-part series by talking about the spectrum of loss. I'm really excited for that discussion. And I'd really like to encourage you to remember to be kind to yourself today. You're doing a great job, and thanks for being here. Thanks for listening to today's episode. If you're interested in working or collaborating with me, please feel free to fill out a consultation form on my website, griefisthenewnormal.com, or follow along on Instagram or TikTok for additional entertainment content. The opening and closing music for this podcast is provided by the Datacorns. All rights reserved.